This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I have a big weekend ahead of me. Anyways, it's been a good week at work. I've been able to get a lot of good things done. I'm going to turn on the air a little bit because it is starting to warm up. A lot of good things got done this week. So we've got more to come, but things are puttering along. It's been a good week. I'd also been working on the cover for the new book for the last several evenings, and I am absolutely certain now that I don't do well if I spend more than about 3 nights not getting enough sleep. Oh, I was up later Sunday night. I still got about 6 hours Sunday night, Monday morning. And I'd stayed up later on Monday, stayed up later on Tuesday. I was doing okay through the day, getting stuff done. Everything was fine. Then I hit Wednesday, which is my fast day. Fasted all day, and then I had to run back into church Wednesday night to help run sound for the choir rehearsal, because they were going to try some mics in a little bit different spot. And so I got, and before I would, about a half hour before I was going in, I was blitzed. I was just standing there, and I was trying to form a question in my head, and I just could not get it to form. It was like I knew there was a word that I wanted to say, but I couldn't figure out what that word was. I was going to search for something, but I could not make it happen. And so I finally just thought, I'll just get a shower. So I got a shower, and then I hadn't drank all my coffee, and so I grabbed my cup of coffee for the day and was heading in, and man, I felt blitzed. I was so blitzed, and I was up at the soundboard, and so when I was at the soundboard, then I actually started drinking my coffee, and once that set in, then I got back to the place like, oh yeah, there you are, brain, great. But I mean, there was a few times I was like, well, how come I can't do that? I apologized to the music minister at our church. I said, I'm sorry, man, I have been up really late working on the cover for my new book, and I said, I'm just blitzed. So, but I think I have all those pieces, you know, in place. At least I know what I'm going to do. I have a couple of things left to do in terms of getting the basic pieces cut out. That's my goal tonight, to get all the basic pieces cut out. I have some suitcases that are going to be really easy, because they're like on white or black, and then, man, that's like, you know. But then I've got a buggy that I have to cut out. And I'm going to get the buggy cut out, hopefully, tonight. That's going to be a hard cut. That's going to be an hour and a half worth of work. But, you know, we'll take it a step at a time, step at a time, step at a time. Once I get all those pieces cut out, then I can start assembling. And then this weekend, take pictures of the kids. Hopefully, got the cover wrapped up by Sunday afternoon or so, start building files, find out how thick the spine is, and lay everything out, just print version this time since it's going to beta, get the store ready for the beta version, etc., etc., etc. Hopefully files are going to the printer by no later than about Tuesday, and then order the 40 books, and then do taxes! I haven't done my taxes yet, so got to do those maybe next weekend. Got to get the taxes done, get sent off. I like to get them done a couple of weeks ahead of time, but I don't necessarily do them instantly.
Excuse me.
So I did get about 7 hours last night, so that helps. That's kind of my normal thing. And I may try to push that a little longer tonight. I may go ahead and just try to do 8 tonight to, you know, give myself a little rest up. But the cover's going to be fine. It's coming together. It's going to be fine. And I will attain to the level of passable mediocrity. There is one little piece on the cover that I'm trying to just figure out how silly I want to get with it. I'll do it both ways, and then I'll figure out what's going on there. Anyway, so we are starting year 9 of the podcast today. I will do a little bit better next year at planning for the XX years worth of podcasts, because I didn't plan that very well. I was frantically running around trying to finish up the book, and, you know, it was not good. It was not good. I just kind of threw everybody into the mix, but it was fine. It came out fine. So anyways, I'll be more specific next year as to what we're doing, when we're doing it, how we're doing it, etc., etc., etc. And that was all my fault. I'm not saying that, it's just I was really distracted. I was trying to get too many things done at the same time. So I had mentioned a couple of weeks ago that at some point I was going to talk about gender. Gender. Why gender? Several weeks before, we talked about beauty. Why beauty? Why strength? Why is it so important that men are strong and that women are beautiful? What is going on there? And in a larger context, just beyond those indicators, then, a follow-on question to that is why gender? Because according to the way we use them now, gender and sex are not interchangeable terms. Okay, this is the way we think now. I'm reading out of a couple of different articles and stuff that I thought were interesting. A person's sex, as determined by their biology, does not always correspond to their gender. Therefore, the terms sex and gender are interchangeable. There was actually a quote, and this is big, long, often discussions, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but there was actually a quote in here that was pretty interesting. The terms sex and gender have not always been differentiated in the English language. English language! That's in the new book. And it was not... English language is poor translations into English from Japanese video games. It's called English language. There is some funny stuff. I pulled some of that stuff for the latest book. I just love that. The term sex and gender have not always been differentiated in the English language, and it was not until 1950s that they formally began to be distinguished. In an effort to clarify usage of the terms sex and gender, Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia wrote in a 1994 briefing, quote, "The word gender has acquired the new and useful connotations of cultural and attitudinal characteristics as opposed to the physical characteristics distinctive to the sexes. That is to say, gender is to sex as feminine is to female, as masculine is to male." All right. So, now in our country, in the last however many years, we have come to this idea that sex and gender are different. Why gender? Why do we need a differentiation for gender as opposed to just sex? What purpose does it ultimately solve or serve, and what problems does it ultimately solve? What purpose does it serve? What problems does it solve? Why is it so important. I've been thinking about this a lot last couple of weeks. Because it seems to me that no matter how you end up twisting this around, it comes out in a way that is not necessarily promoted by spirit, shall we say. Long, long time ago, when Lizzie was in college and we had college kids at the house, that would be one of my questions. When you say, I'm a woman, what does that mean? When you say, I'm a man, what does that mean? And I've mentioned this before. And we would get all sorts of answers. And whatever answer we got, I'd flipped it to the other side. So are you saying boys can't wear pink? So are you saying that boys can't do... Well, no, they can. It's just, you know, when you... You know, and we'd go round robin and nobody could nail this down. What is a masculine trait? What is a feminine trait? And are you saying that if you are that trait, you cannot be the other? See, this, there are in this life, when it comes to sex, certainly androgynous, physically androgynous people that have triple XY chromosomes, you know, that are born with sexual characteristics of both male and female. Certainly there are. In my opinion, those people get a pass. They can be whatever they want. Because there's a physiological basis for it. But on top of all that, we have now defined this new, amorphous, ever-changing, difficult-to-pin-down, vague thing that we're calling gender. Why? Well, it's not necessarily just an evil plot, because we all do this. The question is, why do we do it? And then what has been capitalized upon to encourage us to do it so that it can be capitalized upon? For what end? What purpose does it serve? What problem does it solve? So, it's interesting because as I was coming across this, apparently, didn't read the original article, but apparently, and this isn't the only article like this, I know this, there was a child named Ryland, R-Y-L-A-N-D, a little girl, born a little girl, never wanted to be a little girl, wanted to be a little boy, kept telling her parents, I want to be a little boy. So since the child is 5 years old and must understand its mind, said sarcastically, then the parents decided, well, okay. You know, so they, you know, started referring to her as a boy, cut all her hair off, gave her all boy clothes, etc., etc., etc. There was a response from a woman. And the article for her, this was in 2014, Lindsay Leigh Bentley. Her article was titled, I Am Ryland, the story of a male-identifying little girl who didn't transition. So, okay. So obviously we're not talking about sex here. Sex is pretty easy to figure out. We are talking about a child that was born with everything in place to categorize that child as sex, but now we feel there needs to be an additional categorization. And in the case of Lindsay Leigh Bentley, her parents didn't seem to feel that need. So she was the second child. She does say at the beginning, I'm not here to pass judgment on Riley's parents, nothing like that. She said, I believe they're doing what they believe is the most loving thing to their child. She said, I'm simply sharing my story, she said, because I see so much of it in my 5-year-old self in this child. She said, I was born second daughter. They would go on to have two more daughters. The four of us couldn't be more different, even down to hair color and eye color. Our parents embraced our differences and allowed us to grow as individuals, not concerned with the social norms for girls. I often joke that I was the boy my father never had. My daughter was a father was a free spirit, 100% unconcerned with what people think of him. Well, I'm not sure that's true, but that's okay. And he thought nothing of out-of-the-box behavior. She said, I function more of a first as a firstborn than a secondborn. However, does this make me a firstborn? Which is a valid question. Anyhow, even as a baby, I seem to prefer boy things. I was rough, tough, daring. My parents had to cut my curly hair short because I would twist it into knots and refuse to let my parents brush it. I once managed to make my way onto the second-story roof and was gleefully running around as my parents had simultaneous panic attacks. My choice of toys were sticks, slingshots, bows and arrows, guns, muds, motorcycles, and monsters. When my sister and I picked out My Little Ponies, I chose the blue one and promptly cut off all its lustrous long hair as soon as possible. My Barbie also got a chop. She said, I loved going on hunting trips with my dad, and I thought it was amazing when he taught me how to pop the head off a dove. I wanted to be a boy. I desperately wanted to be a boy. I thought boys had more fun. I liked the way a boy in our society... I felt like a boy in the way our society views gender. I liked blue and green more than pink and purple. I remember sitting as high as I could up in a huge mulberry tree, bow and arrow in hand, trying to kiss my elbow. A neighbor lady had told me that if I accomplished this, I would turn into a boy, which was more what I wanted in that moment as a child than anything else. She said, thankfully, my parents did not adhere to the strict stereotypes of boys like blue and pinks like girls like pink. The boys play with dinosaurs, etc., etc. They just let me be me. They let me be a child who wore jeans more often than skirts. They let me play with slingshots rather than princess wands. They didn't conclude that I was gay or transgender. They didn't even put me in a, they didn't put me in a box that would shape my future at the expense of my own free will. She said, growing up until she was about the age of 14, her best friends were all boys. But, of course, things, you know, went along. She said, at Thanksgiving, I would play cowboys and Indians. I wanted, always wanted to be the wild Indians. She said, I remember one year, my parents gave us porcelain dolls. My sister got a music, got a lamb, and I got mine with a shepherd boy and a donkey because they thought I would like it better. She said she was at a sleepover one time when she was 7. And she said where a girlfriend of hers experimented together, you know, during a sleepover. She said, looking back, I believe she had been molested and was acting out what had been done to her. This doesn't make me transgender. Doesn't make me a lesbian. It makes me a child growing up in a broken world. She said, and now in this day and age, I would have been labeled as transgender. They would have cut off all my hair. They would have given me boys' clothes, blue wall in my room rather than pink. And I would have been told to pretend I have a penis, at least until I could have one surgically in it. Had this happened, I could not even begin to imagine how traumatic puberty would have been for me. She said, fast forward to 14, 15, I start going through puberty. I never really thought of the opposite sex in a sexual manner before. My attraction was immediate, as is to this day to men. At the risk of going all Shania on you, I feel like a woman. Had my parents decided at age 5 that I was a boy, I could not imagine the confusion I would have experienced during my teen years. Still loves certain male things, but she also likes getting dressed up, going out, etc., 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 etc. Okay, what do we conclude from all of this? You know, it's really interesting, first of all, that we think children who are in the midst of change, who are growing up, whose brains aren't even formed yet, that we think we're doing them any favors by saying, well, you know, you feel like a girl, you feel like a boy, which is opposite of what you are, so we're just going to change everything. Okay, maybe we should just slow down. Because what is pushing us to that is these rigid definitions of gender, and specifically rigid definitions of gender that happen to disagree with what the sex is. Because one of the things that has happened, I think, I'm getting my mail, one moment, in this assignment of the structures of gender and the creation of this thing called gender, is that it has morphed, it has metastasized into something far beyond just simple sex, and in the process, I think, has actually placed more constraints on us in a society than we might have happened before this came along. Let me give you an example. You know, back in the good old days, in the 50s and stuff, you know, men did certain things and women did certain things, but there was also, you know, if it's based on sex and you've got parents like the I.M. Riley's lady's parents, the parents can just like, yeah, well, that's fine, you know, because the parents are beyond the fact that it's not all these characteristics. It's not kindness, it's not strength, it's not meanness, it's not blue, it's not purple, you know, it's not pink, it's not green, it's not any of those things that actually dictate anything that's important here. You know, what's really important, if you want hard categories, is to look at a person genetically and saying, yeah, you're male, you're female. Done. Now then, what does it mean beyond that? Well, it only means what the sexual characteristics are good for. Men have a penis to deliver sperm. Women have a vagina so that the sperm can be delivered and they can give birth to the child. Women have breasts so that they can feed the child. There's all these very simple, understandable things. So why do we insist around the world, in cultures around the world, why do we insist that there be a host of a whole other defining characteristics? That women do this and behave this way, and that men do this and behave this way. And I would suggest to you that at the end of the day, that the main reason we do that is for objectification, so that we can identify, categorize, classify, and then make decisions based on those categorizing without ever having to get to know someone, without ever having to have a relationship with anyone. We just want to put people in their little boxes, and we want to say, there, I'm done with that person, I'm moving on. So we want to look across the room, and we want to be able to say, oh, can I have sex with it as guys? Or we want to look across the room, and we want to say, oh, can I use it for an ox as women? Will it protect me? Will it throw itself in front of the bus for me? It's just all objectification. Gender, I believe, is objectification. Because you're trying to categorize where if you will go to an individual person and you will explore with them and you will talk with them, what you will find in every single individual person is this huge spectrum of gender characteristics that we assign to people. You are never going to find anybody who is 100% across the board. Never, ever. Because we are individuals and we should treat each other as individuals. And our sex should simply be acknowledged as, well, that's something. You have a name, you have an age, you have a sex. That's it. But all the rest of this stuff, like, oh, I like to get dressed up and have people look at me. Oh, I like this particular color or that particular color. Oh, I'm just so timid and so weak and someone will have to help me. Oh, I'm a brave warrior and I'm going to go out and conquer those things. Those things have nothing to do with sex. Those things have to do with individual people. And I think we would be far better off if we would just treat people as individuals. And one of the tricks that I do is I try, when I'm talking to people, I try to just negate whether they're male or female in my mind. And just treat every single person the same until I can get to know them. And frankly, if I was going to use rough approximations, I have certain techniques, roughly, that I use on some people who are quote-unquote feminine, and I have other techniques that I use in conversations and dealing with people that are quote-unquote masculine. But that's just a convenience of categorization. You might as well call it A and B, because there are pretty simple to define, profound, basic ways that people relate to the world. The problem is when you start assigning them as feminine or masculine, you can always find exceptions to that rule. So we'll just call them A and B, what some people would call feminine and masculine. And the fact of the matter is, I can find some people who relate to the world like A, and I can find some people who relate to the world as B, and I'm never actually going to know how that person relates to the world unless I get to know them. And in what I do as a consultant, it's extremely important for me to get this right. Extremely important. Even if the person wants to hide that from me for a while. So I have to always have my antenna up, listening, trying to figure out how they define themselves, how they define their place in the world, how they define the world's place in their lives, all those things you have to figure out. And so gender just ain't that important to me. And frankly, when I'm relating to a person as a human being, neither is sex. So why is it so important in our world? Because marketers love gender. They love categorizing because it's a whole lot easier to sell to a whole bunch of people if you can do these kind of mass categorizations and kind of just do basic rules about how to hit the motivation on people in categories. Advertisers love this. Movie makers love gender. You know, I got so tickled the other day because they were talking about, I was watching this TED Talk on, and I gotta quit. Watching this TED Talk on how many women were in starring roles in movies and blah, 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 blah. You know, and I just was watching Ghost in the Shell, previews from Ghost in the Shell. And they were saying, yes, and some of the marketing people say that, well, a woman can't really carry a movie, you know, despite Wonder Woman, they're all saying this, and this is good, we need one more women carrying movies, and blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, yeah, what you need is more women buying tickets to the types of movies they want to see. Then everything will change on its own. But let's not look at Wonder Woman and say that that's actually led by a female. Even though her sex is female. If you wanted to figure out what her gender is, she is a masculinized female or a feminized masculine, one of the two. Just from what I've seen in the clips. And Ghost in the Shell, the first thing they do, bless her heart, which her name just slipped my mind, Johansson, Scarlett Johansson. The first thing she does within, the first 3 minutes of Ghost in the Shell is she takes her coat off and she's got a skin tight suit on underneath, and that's all. And you can pretty much see every curve. Okay, is that your typical woman? No, that is either a masculinized female or it's a feminized male, one of the two. But it's not your average woman. It's just not. But I think the other place that gender really comes into play is to cause, whether this is purposely or not purposely done, I will not say, but it does cause a great deal of confusion. And the community that benefits the most out of gender confusion is the LBTG community. Actually, it's LBDGTIAQ. I can't keep track of it anymore. because they're confused about where they sit. And that confusion actually helps promote their community. Now, if they want to do that, that's just fine. Me personally, I think we should do our best to step ourselves away from gender as it's currently defined in our society and always, always, always just try to relate to the individual person. Look them in the eye. Be genuinely concerned about the individual person. And if we do that, all the rest of that foolishness of what's trying to be pushed on us by advertisers, what's trying to grab our eyeballs out in the entertainment industry, all the fear that's trying to be stirred up in various groups with what's going to happen if we don't keep these boundaries in place, blah, 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 all that stuff becomes inconsequential and unimportant because we really just need to go out and love people. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.